us a rhythm and rush these days, where the lights don't move and the colors don't fade. Leaves you empty with nothing but dreams, in a world gone shallow, in a world gone mean. Sometimes there's things a man cannot know. The gears won't turn and the leaves won't grow. There's no place to run and no gasoline. Engines won't turn and the train won't leave. I will stay with you. To stay alive. Well, the way I feel is the way I ride. Listen like the thoughts of a man.
Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by PlumbingSupply.com, the worldwide online plumbing store celebrating its 20th year of service on the internet. Plumbing supplies from A to Z can be found on their website at PlumbingSupply.com. You are tuned in to 90.1 FM Community Radio. This is Tamara, and you're listening to Love in the 21st Century. I'm joined today by Miss Sadie Rose, a local writer, fashionista, and mother who is willing to share us in a candid view of her life as a single mother. And we welcome you so much.
Thanks, Tammy. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm going to give some of our listeners out there a general idea of what we're talking about. You know, talk about single mothers. I googled some statistics, and here it looks like once it was largely limited to poor women and minorities, single motherhood is now becoming the new norm. This prevalence is due in part of the growing trend of children born outside marriage, a societal trend that was virtually unheard of decades ago. About 4 out of 10 children were born to unwed mothers. Nearly 2/3 are born to mothers under the age of 30. Of all single-parent families in the U.S., single mothers make up the majority. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, out of 12 million single-parent families in 2014, more than 80% were headed by single mothers. 80%, that's astounding. That's an astounding number. And so I'm really, this goes on and on, of course, but I'm really excited that you were able to join me tonight and to be able to share this perspective, because as we've sort of talked briefly about it beforehand, it's not really something that, it just said in that just little explanation of statistics that it's becoming a societal norm, but it's kind of like a subversive norm. It's not like something that is that talked about. So I'm really excited to kind of get the conversation going and see where it goes to tonight. So would you like to do a little bit of an introduction on yourself?
Sure. My name is Sadie Rose. I've lived in Chico for just about 6 years now, and I have a son who is going to turn 11 this week. So I had him when I was 22. I had just turned 22. And I was married when he was born, and then I got divorced a year later. So most of my parenting has been as a single parent, and varying degrees of that. You know, there was some help from his dad for a while, and then I've had other helpers that come in and out of my life over the years. And but we've just had a really great time. And yeah, just about 6 years ago, we ended up in Chico, which was just a really great community for us. It still is. And I felt really at home once I got here. I moved here from Portland. He was born in Eugene, and then we moved to Portland when he was about 2 months old. And yeah, my first years here, I spent doing a lot of vintage clothing, and I had a store online and recently a brick and mortar store called Sadie Deluxe. So people might know me from that work, a lot of photo shoots and fashion stuff. And then recently I've shifted more into my writing, which I've always done, but now I'm moving more into a professional realm with that.
Wonderful. So as you mentioned before, you had your son when you were 22nd. I feel like this is such a perfect time to be talking about your life in the last 11 years since he's just about to have a birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look over the last 11 years, the last decade essentially of your life, what sort of moments stand out to you in comparison to your age? So, you know, like we talked about that what the average maybe person in their 20s may have been experiencing versus like the things that you were experiencing.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that comes up for me is I got pregnant when I was in college. It was my last term of college. I graduated college, but that last term I was pregnant, and being in academia and being, you know, at that time I was only 21. I was 21 when I got pregnant, and being this very young pregnant woman in college was really unusual. You know, it was just really shocking to people that I was going to, quote, keep the baby, you know, because I think in academia, you're really on this different path. And I remember feeling scared to tell some of my professors because I knew they wanted me to go on and go to grad school and do this and this and this. And in academia, motherhood is kind of viewed as this, really as this dead end to a lot of things. And so that was really interesting, just being, I did feel kind of ostracized, and a lot of the people my age were just really not on that path, so they just couldn't relate, and a lot of times didn't want to relate. But then there were always people that could relate to me. So that was, you know, that was, I felt I had to be really courageous to just kind of do that and say, well, this is what I want to do. And
was that always your view about motherhood, that you know, if you, like, being a young mother, that would be something that you would pursue, that you would, you know, be a young mother? Did you feel like that was going to happen, or was it more of just like that was what life brought you?
I really wanted that, you know. I was so young that I hadn't really put it down on paper or anything, you know. I was young, but I remember deep down I really wanted to have a baby young, because I really wanted to be a mom, and I really wanted to, just as a woman, you know, I really wanted to experience that aspect of motherhood, and I wanted to do it before I got old, mm-hmm. or what to me at the time felt old, which when you're, you know, 21, 30 seems really old.
Right. So you were 21 when you had your son?
When I got pregnant.
When you got pregnant. Were you married when you got pregnant?
No, I wasn't married when I got pregnant. So I got pregnant, I graduated, I got married right after graduation because all my family was in town.
Mm-hmm.
Asher was born, and then a few months later I moved to Portland. So that was all kind of within 6 months. It was really crazy. I mean, my life just changed so much in that 6 months.
So how do you feel like your pregnancy influenced that 6 months of your life, and especially in terms of getting married?
Well, yeah, I was with Asher's dad, who he had always, if you just wanted to get married, he always wanted to get married. And I was like, that's crazy. I'm so young. And we're both young, you know. And then when I got pregnant, I was like, okay, I'll get married. It just seemed, it did feel like the right thing to do. And I wanted Asher to really feel to be accepted by kind of the older generations in our families.
Mm-hmm.
And marriage is really powerful in that way.
Right.
So, and that's old. That's been the case for centuries, you know, that marriage really makes people feel different mm-hmm. a lot of times about babies being born.
Right. So, but then that marriage lasted about a year, you said? Or?
Yeah, probably about a year and a half altogether.
So how did that influence your role as a mother? I mean, at that point, you've been a mother then for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still, what, like 22, 23?
Yep.
Making major life changes once again?
Yeah.
And how did you navigate that? How did you navigate? Because then you're talking about, like, the societal norms, you know, and how, like, getting married would be normalize things in a sense that then you're kind of, like, you know, going under the wave again.
Yeah, well, the cool thing was, I mean, you know, I am who I am, and being pregnant and becoming a mother just really made me sink into that. And I remember after my son was born, well, and during my pregnancy, I just got the download, and I was like, I can do anything. I can do anything. That's really how I felt.
Wow.
And I just felt like I really wanted to be in charge of my life, and I wanted to live a really happy life, and that was really clear to me. So when I decided to leave his dad to, you know, to so that I could create a really happy life mm-hmm. for myself, I didn't really feel scared. I just knew that's what I wanted to do. And so, I mean, it was difficult. There were, you know, it was hard, you know, logistically, I think, and actually implementing that. But I knew I could do it, and I knew I could make it happen in a way that felt good. And I did. And what I did was I looked high and low to find somebody to move in with, because I knew I wanted to live with another woman. I didn't want to just move out into some apartment with my baby, because that sounded so lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard. You know, in Portland, a lot of people just, like in a lot of cities, they want to be really, they want to go out and all these things. So to find somebody who was down to live with me and my one-year-old son was hard. And then, but I didn't settle. And then I met this woman who was, she was 37 at the time. And she was like, oh, I've been wanting baby energy in my life. You know, this is perfect. And she was an organic and natural chef, a personal chef. And she had this gorgeous flat on top of, you know, the top story of a house. And we moved in with her and lived there for 3 years. And she totally became my family and taught me how to cook and helped me take care of my son. And it was really great.
So you mentioned something about feeling empowered once mm-hmm. you became a mother. Can you speak a little bit more about where you felt that came from?
Yeah, that really came from understanding my intuition and what I really wanted. Because, you know, the way I even ended up in a bad relationship, which I ended up marrying him and having a baby, was because I just didn't have the strength to stick to my guns and say, this isn't what I want. And becoming a mother, it just became so clear what my intuition was and what it felt like. And I remember noting that mentally and mm-hmm. saying, okay, this is what this feels like. This is what's real. This is the guide.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really empowering. I mean, just to know, you know, when I was 22, to have that, to know that this is what it feels like when my intuition speaks
mm-hmm.
was really empowering.
Were there certain things that you became more interested in or drawn to once you became a mother?
Well, I got really interested in chilling out a lot.
Yeah.
It was more of like a falling away of things. I mean, definitely at first, you know, I was interested in hanging out. You want to just talk about babies all the time. And, but no, when I look back on that early time, I just really went into this mother zone, and I really wanted to be able to be with him as much as I could, so I could nurse and so I could sleep. And, yeah, it was really a lot about that.
Where was your mother in this process?
my mom lives in Incline, and she was there, and she was really awesome. You know, she, I feel like in this ocean of people that were kind of a little bit freaked out that I decided to have a baby so young, she just totally rallied and was really stoked. She was really stoked she was going to be a grandma. And then when my water broke, I called her, and she's like, okay, I'm coming out. And I stayed, my water broke, and then it was late at night, so I stayed at home that night. And then, so the next day she was there, and we all went to the hospital together. He was born at the hospital in Eugene. And yeah, and then those first few days she stayed and took care of me and cooked food and cleaned sheets, and it was so amazing. And yeah, then she had to go home.
How do you feel that your mother's role in your life influenced your role now as a mother?
Well, my mom was always really great about she was really good about prioritizing rest and play and she was really creative and just, so I think she really taught me some of the biggest legacies she's left me are that, to value rest and just kind of that open space in life and how to create it, which is really by setting boundaries and saying no. Mm-hmm. And she taught me a lot about saying no. And when I was little, she would always tell me, she's like, if you don't want to do that, you blame it on me. You say your mom said you couldn't. And that was nice. Such a relief to me, you know, because as a child, sometimes and as an adult, you feel bad for saying no. Mm-hmm. So I could always blame it on her. But just that we had an awareness around it and a conversation really set me up for, and then especially once I became a mom, because then your priorities really become clear. But she really taught me that, and I'm so grateful.
What do you mean your priorities really become clear once you're a mother?
I mean that before that, it's kind of like, yeah, I'll go do that. That sounds kind of cool, you know? But once I had a baby, I mean, my time was just so insanely valuable. Mm-hmm. Because, well, first of all, because sleep is so precious. I mean, everything you hear about that is true.
Right.
And, and then just kind of the energies that I wanted in my life became very distilled. So my priorities, if something only seemed kind of cool, there's just no way I would do it anymore. Whereas before I had a kid, I think I was more flexible with my time.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Gotta start to prioritize. I mean, that's a good lesson for anybody out there. I'm taking notes about
It is.
So if you had to describe kind of like, you know, like the, could you describe the last 10 years sort of like in a timeline, like what those phases of your experience have been like as a mother? Is it easy to kind of group like this, these years where, I mean, because we can look at child development and we can say like developmentally the child was doing this, you know, these different times. Like what about as a mother, like what, and especially as a single mother, like what those phases of your life were like?
Yeah, I guess I break it down into, and this is just, you know, such a surface nutshell situation, but Asher was born, and then I was with his dad for about a year, and then I moved out, and then his dad was still kind of around and would help, but Asher was really small. And so then, so kind of when Asher was about 1 to 4, that was really, it was mostly just me. And his dad did end up, when Asher was 2, just completely disappearing for a while, which was really sad for Asher. And that was when too, I mean I had great girlfriends in Portland, and so I was, you know, 23 to 26 27, and really wanting to experience my 20s in the ways that they were, but not totally being able to. And then when he was 4, then I met a man who then I would end up dating for for 4 years, and that's why I ended up moving down here. He lived here. Mm-hmm. So when Asher was 5, we moved to Chico. And then I had a while of kind of co-parenting with Matt, my ex-boyfriend, and living down here. And that was really awesome. That was a really good time. And then that relationship ended a few years ago. And then Asher was big. By that time, he was big. You know, when I started that relationship, he was still really small. He was 4-ish. And right. Then on the other side of that, he was 8 or 9. So the past few years, which is kind of the phase I'm in now, has mm-hmm. been, he's a really big kid and just understands a lot. You know, now if he understands me being in love or being sad or all these things, you know, that when they're babies, I think sometimes we can feel like we're hiding it from them, even though we're probably not. But
right. And so how has your sort of development as a mother and the relationships that you've had, you know, been shaped around your son Asher's life?
Yeah, well, I mean, at first I just couldn't even, when I was younger and he was younger, I just was like, could not imagine being in a relationship because I just was in so deep with my baby. It was really just like down this rabbit hole. And I just couldn't imagine bringing somebody else into that.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I still dated, you know, I mean, I was in my 20s and I wanted to date and make out with boys. And I worked my butt off to make that happen. You know, mm-hmm. I worked really hard. I supported us. I paid for babysitters. I had this amazing babysitter, such a godsend. It was my best friend's younger sister. So she was about 14 mm-hmm. when she started babysitting for me. So she, you know, she was too young to want to go out or anything like that. And she just loved me and loved Asher. And she would just be there when I needed her. And she would stay late. She would sleep over. I mean, that was a huge blessing, I think, for any single mom. You know, people can get really stuck in feeling like I can't afford it. But finding a babysitter that you can have a relationship with, even if it's a family member, is so essential. And, you know, I just loved her. Her name was Michelle.
So what do you feel like is the difference of being, well, let's first, like, what does being a single mother mean to you? I think that, like, for me, not being a parent, sometimes I wonder what that term means. Like, you know, mm-hmm. what to you it defines being a single mother? Because I definitely know, you know, people that have different types of relationships. And in a sense, yes, they're single parents. But, you know, what for you classifies it, and what, like, who are the people that you identify with when you say, like, being a single mother?
Yeah, that's interesting for me, because I've kind of learned to not identify it, because the way that I identify as a single mother is really different than a lot of people. And mm-hmm. I just want to give them all that. You know, I think it can feel, you know, I feel like my story, I did spend a lot of years totally on my own with no child support coming in or whatever. But mm-hmm. I've also talked to people that just, you know, I also got to share my pregnancy with his dad, and it was really great. That was a great time. And there are people who don't have that even, or mm-hmm. people that are just divorced and then they're single parenting in this really kind of supported but separate co-parenting. And which... So yeah, I think it's just, I kind of really feel like every woman can just define that on her own. That's what I've really mm-hmm. learned about that.
So do you feel like what would you say the difference is between maybe a single mother versus a mother that is sharing space with the father currently in the home? What does that feel like to you?
Well, I think the biggest difference that comes to mind for me is, because I lived with other women, and I think having someone in the house, mm-hmm. you know, having the privilege to say, I'm going to run to the store, or I'm going to get in the shower.
Right.
Or just, it's kind of those little things, having the privilege to do these little things. Because running to the store when you have a 3-year-old really sucks. Because you have to, like,
it's a mission. Yeah.
Put on their jacket and cram them in their car seat and buckle them up and then get to the store and pull them out. And then they're probably going to run around the store, you know, so... I think just having someone else where you're like, who can kind of balance that time with you. And then also, of course, having a partner or somebody around to really support the mother emotionally
mm-hmm.
Is huge. To just feel supported in the world,
mm-hmm.
in your mission as a mom, can make all the difference.
So if you're just tuning in, we are talking about single motherhood with Miss Sadie Rose here on Love in the 21st Century. My name is Tamara, and we are here every Tuesday afternoon from 5 to 6 talking about love and the practical to the philosophical. So we're going to get back to our conversation here shortly after some words from Mr. Jim Hightower.
For today's report, I have a whole bunch of statistics for you. Wait, don't run away. Where are you going? Come back here and sit still while I drill these stats into your head. I realize that numbers can numb the brain, but this is a good story, and I promise that these statistics are easy to absorb. In fact, the number 400 pretty much sums it up. It's a story of political intrigue and corruption involving some of America's wealthiest families and corporations. Start with the Billionaire 400, a clique of the elite organized by the conniving Koch brothers. These ultra-rich right-wingers gather each winter in some warm-weather resort for a secretive, invitation-only retreat. There, they plot strategies and pledge money for electing politicos who will support their vision of corporate rule in America. For the 2016 elections, they've already committed nearly $1 billion to impose their vision of plutocracy over our democratic ideals, double the combined amount that the Republican and Democratic parties will spend. Then, there are the secretive super PACs that are sacking up tens of millions of dollars to back various presidential candidates. Again, a mere 400 corporations and rich families, each writing checks for hundreds of thousands and even millions of dollars, have put up nearly half of all the money in these electioneering committees. But now, here comes the antidote to this corruption of our politics by fat cats. Instead of being financed by 400 special interests, Bernie Sanders' campaign has raised its $15 million from 400,000 ordinary Americans. In fact, the average donation to Bernie is a heartwarming, soul-saving $31.30. This is Jim Hightower saying, you can't buy a president for 30 bucks, but you can help elect one who is not owned by big money. And isn't that the way it ought to be?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Disclaimer, the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR members, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. We are chatting with Miss Sadie Rose about single parenting and the inevitable different perspective that comes up when you're experiencing that. It's definitely a story that is not very told. You know, when I think about it and I try to jog my memory of any sort of like media coverage, like we're talking, you know, movies or anything that really emphasizes the single parent role, you don't really see that. And it's really, it's staggering because of the statistics I've been looking at recently, how common it is. It's like this reality that is definitely out there, but we don't really want to accept as a society quite yet. So we're starting to tell that story a little bit here today. So I'm excited about that. Thank you, Sadie.
Sure.
So let's get back into our conversation about your relationship with your son and how that has been, you know, shaped around the relationships that you've had and like how you've approached it as a mother in terms of, you know, dating can be a challenging thing in general, but like having a child in that situation can be a little bit more challenging. Some people are more apt to not have their children around anybody, and whether they were married before or not. And I guess I just want to hear your perspective on it and how you sort of have navigated that, because you're in a relationship now. So how that has been, how you've addressed that.
Yeah, so I guess I knew, you know, early on that there were going to be men that came in and probably out of mine and Asher's lives because I wanted to love people and I was so young and I knew that, you know, I wasn't going to just sit around and wait for a husband or something. And so I just knew that, and I think I've always been a believer, you know, that Asher has his own karma too, and that people would come into our lives for both of us. And yeah, of course, you know, it really came down to trusting myself with who comes around and who would kind of be in relationship with both of us, you know, because I did, you know, if I was casually dating someone, I would just go on dates and that was fine. But if people were going to come in and spend time with both of us, you know, who were those people going to be? And I've always looked at it just kind of as this I've been building a family, you know, and that was so true because when I was a single mom in Portland and he was younger, I really just had to build this family of women, and I did. Mm-hmm. And of my girlfriends, I had some really close girlfriends, and then the women I lived with, which it was two different women over the course of 5 years, and you know, they were our family. Asher was raised by these young women. Mm-hmm. And it was really awesome in a lot of ways. You know, of course we could go into the whole like not having a dad around for a while thing, but that's kind of a big conversation,
right?
And yeah, and so then having men come in, and it really wasn't until I met Matt, who I mentioned, that that I brought someone who really kind of said, I want to help.
Right. What were there any conversations that you had with Asher around your relationships? Like, was there any point where he started to ask questions about, you know, the people, maybe like when he didn't see them anymore, or just when they were first starting to come around? Like, were there conversations around that?
Yeah. Yeah. I've always tried to be really honest with him. And so, it was hard, you know, he was really bummed when his dad disappeared. And
right.
So that I really wanted to be honest about it while still sounding really positive about his father, which was really challenging and probably a really good exercise for me. So kind of framing that, you know, letting him know that his dad was gone indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was honest, but not being told, you know, saying that it was because he had felt like he had to go work somewhere else.
Right.
You know, he left the state. So, yeah, I kind of talked to him about that. And then with dating, I've tried to be honest, too. And, you know, and I've been like, sometimes we just love people for a while, and then it's just time, things come to a close, you know. Everything has a different cycle.
Right.
And so, yeah, I feel like I've always been pretty honest with him. And, again, as he's gotten older and, you know, now he has just, he's can speak so well and understand so much. And so, yeah, I just try to be really honest because I'm still learning too.
Right.
You know, so I just try to tell him that. And but I'm a huge believer. I just believe in love.
Mm-hmm.
So
it seems like a really great relationship that the two of you have. What is the relationship that he has with his father?
Well, it's come a long way. Now his dad lives in the Bay Area and is remarried to this really awesome woman, and so he goes and sees him as often as he can, which ends up being usually one weekend a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then on vacations, and then for extended weeks in the summertime. So Nice. That's how it's been for about 3 years now.
That's great. So
yeah, and he's stoked. I mean, I'm just so happy for him. He loves going to his dad's.
Yeah. It's rebuilding the family unit there, maybe a few years later, but
yeah, I mean, they missed out on some awesome little time, but they did. I mean, that first year, they, you know, I feel like that mattered, that his dad was there when he was tiny, and so that's imprinted.
So when something you mentioned earlier before was about the differences that you felt that were happening, like in the lives of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And versus, like, you know, like you're 20 something, you're a mother, and your friends are 20 something and going out. So what do you feel like when you think about that? Like, is there something that, like, specifically comes to mind that you felt like there was, that you weren't, that was happening that you weren't experiencing?
Yeah. When I look back on that time, and that's, you know, what I love to talk about is, I felt envy, and mm-hmm. I envied my friend's freedom. And, you know, because even if I did get a night out,
mm-hmm.
you know, I would come home to my kid.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, and I was so young, and I remember really going through this process of grief, of mm-hmm. grieving the loss of my 20s, you know, which sounds dramatic, but that's kind of how it felt, because I just, you know, became an adult really quickly, and I did really well at it. You know, it came pretty easily to me, but it definitely carried with it some sorrow in a sense of, you know, I kind of was watching my friends live in this state of wild abandon,
mm-hmm.
and I just wasn't going to go there. I was always being responsible. So
have you seen any difference now? Because I feel like being, you know, 30 now, like having conversations with my friends that want to have children, that like, do you almost feel like there might be a slight reverse where like some people that you know wish they would have had children younger?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I tell all my girlfriends that there's a very fine line between, you know, in our 20s, so many people are like, oh my God, I can't get pregnant. I can't get pregnant. And then really quick, and it can turn to like, oh my God, I need to get pregnant. I need right? to have a baby. And it's, so I do talk about that a lot with my girlfriends, you mm-hmm. know, especially my girlfriends that are my age. You know, I'm 33 now, and because mm-hmm. I'm always like, when is somebody going to have a little girl? One of my friends, like none of my close friends really have had babies yet.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I do. This is an interesting conversation.
Yeah, I think that is definitely, I feel like that is, you said it so well, you know, it's like the emphasis is on not having a kid for so long. And then there's a certain point where it's like, oh, like, I what if I can have kids, like, you know, and then it's like this whole other side of the coin. So,
and one thing I do want to say to that is that, you know, I think it's good for women, all women, however mm-hmm. old you are, to get really clear. I mean, if you can get clear on it, do you want to have babies? And, you know, to, it will always take a letting go of freedom. Mm-hmm. That what I went through when I was 22 will happen to anyone.
Right.
You know, and if you do want to do it, you know, it's just such a wonderful part of womanhood. So
mm-hmm.
I think it is good to get clear, just how we would get clear on anything else
right.
in our lives.
What do you feel like helped you get clear about becoming a mother?
Well, it's so funny, you know, because I actually have, there's a story to this. When I was 21, I read The Red Tent.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read that?
I have not.
Oh, it's so good. And it really just speaks to the ancient mother,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's a biblical story retold from the point of view of women.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about, you know, how it used to be this culture of women where we would all go to the red tent and bleed together and, you know, support each other and having babies and delivering babies. And so I read that, and that just struck me really deeply at the time. And then I was in the car with two of my girlfriends, and one girlfriend, they were sisters, they are sisters, she said, what if the world was going to end, you know, whenever, I don't remember when it was going to end, what would you want to do? And my one girlfriend was like, well, I don't really know. And then Anna, the girl who had asked the question, was like, well, I would want to have a baby because I really want to, she felt like that would just unlock mm-hmm. her womanhood.
Right.
And I just remember being so struck in that moment, and it really resonated with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, I want to have a baby by the time I'm 25.
Yeah.
I told my friends that. They were like, what?
You're 21 at the time?
Yeah, I was 21.
So it's right before
or 20,
you.
Or, I think I was 20, about to turn 21. So it was just about a year before.
Right. Yeah, I feel like there's definitely, having friends that have become mothers, you know, an era of mysticism that sort of comes with being a mother. And I can't really put my finger on what it is, but it's like this energetic and so thing that exists. And one of my questions earlier when I asked you, was there anything that you sort of found yourself more into once mm-hmm. you became a mother? And I feel like from an outsider's perspective, what I've seen mothers become, well, naturally you have to be more aware of natural rhythms of like what's going on with your child, what you're feeding your child, you know, becoming more aware of like remedies to heal your children. I feel like when you're talking about your friend having that awake, like feeling like she would, the mother would be awoken in her, like that ancient mother. It's like it sort of is, in a sense. It's like this primal knowledge of like this ancient knowledge that's stored in your body mm-hmm. starts to become more like an essence of who you are. So I always look at mothers in that way. I feel like you share that energy, just like this kind of mysticism about you, and it's quite magical.
Thanks.
And nice.
Yeah, I think I feel that too.
So how have you found time in your, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on as a young adult, just like transitions, like stepping into your own power, to becoming a mother. How have you found time to make time for yourself in caring for yourself?
Mm. Yeah, you know, I find time for that because I really prioritized it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that initially came from being young and kind of selfish
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. But, you know, like I said, having the babysitter And I just learned right away. And, you know, sending Asher to spend weekends with my dad or my mom or even my roommates would take care of him while I went and did things. And I just always made that a priority. And I got really good at asking for help, you know, because it's hard to ask people to take care of your 18-month-old or whatever. But I just did it. And so he learned at a really young age how to sleep at other people's houses, how to be with other people. And yeah, I just really, it was a priority to me. So I guess I would always make sure I had time to do some things that I wanted to do without him.
Right.
Because that's a different type of nurturing than being with him.
Right. So how, like, it sounds like you had a lot, you had the support there with your family and your friends being able to be there for you. Do you feel like there was a difference between living in Oregon, where you were before for the first 5 or 6 years, versus living here in Chico in Northern California in terms of the support you received?
I do, yeah, and I just want to give a big shout out to Chico for being such a great community for what I call alternative families, because in Portland, even though Portland is really viewed as this progressive city, which it is in a lot of ways, it was also, I mean, I was just the only one like me, which was, you know, an educated college graduate, white, young, single mother. Everyone else was at least a decade older than me, it seemed like. And because, you know, I sent him to preschool and I'd go to the park. There's tons of parks. And so we had these communities, but I was really kind of so different from all these. Everyone was married, owned a house, had a mortgage. And so the discussions like really revolved a lot around mortgages and houses and remodels and marriages, really. I mean, to such an extreme. And I finally did find one other single mom friend, Catherine, my friend Catherine in Portland, if she's listening. And then when I moved to Chico, I just, you know, and I moved here to be with this man who was like, I will help you. I'll help you parent. I'll co-parent with you, which was just totally music to my ears. And then he had, so I met his community first, you know, that was how it worked. And he had all these friends that, you know, that he had one friend who had a baby with one woman. They were unmarried, but the woman also had an older daughter that he parented. And then another family that wasn't married, but they had these two amazing daughters. And then I noticed also at gatherings, there was so much more of the it takes a village vibe here,
right?
Where the children would go play and we knew that they would be okay and that we would all watch them.
Right.
Whereas I remember in the city feeling there was not that vibe at the park. You know, you kept an eye on your kid because it was just really separate. And here there was so much community around it and all these different kinds of unmarried or single or young parents. And it was just so awesome. I just remember feeling so stoked to be here and we all just, I don't know, just the way we understand our kids here, you know, and let them just kind of be free, really. That California freedom.
Yeah. Nice. And it's definitely true. I can relate to you in seeing that mentality of, you know, watching out for people's children and making sure that, you know, like if something's going on, somebody's going to say something. They're not just going to let kids kind of be up to something that they more than likely your parents are going to say that you can't be doing. And so just that feeling that general supervision is happening in a lot of places and a lot of gatherings that happen in this area.
Yeah, it's so nice.
Which, like you said, is unique. That's not, you know, a lot of places, like if somebody says something to somebody else's kid, sometimes the parent takes offense to it.
Totally.
So it is definitely a unique reality to this area, which is nice. So if you could speak to a younger you and some of the things that you've gone through, what sort of insights would you give yourself?
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I just wrote an essay kind of about that. Well, I published one recently up to my teenage self, but then I did another one on the context of motherhood. And I think I would tell myself that to really be brave, to be courageous, and that You know, I would just tell myself that it was going to be hard, because I remember wishing that somebody had told me how hard it was going to be, just being a mom, not even a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
But that also with that would come just the most amazing gifts of intuition and healing and connection and knowing and this, you know, kind of, I feel like when you become a mother, you get this key to these doors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you choose to engage and to use the key, it can be really powerful. So I think, yeah, I would just be really honest with myself and be like, it's going to really kind of suck in a lot of ways. And your sexuality is going to totally change. You know, I just feel like so different in those ways. And, but, that I would just always, but it, that it would be so clear what was right.
What were the biggest changes you felt that you experienced? I mean, when you say, you know, again, obviously large generalizations versus like before you were a mother versus, you know, being a mother, like the big kind of shifts that happened.
Well, you know, I just mentioned sexuality, and I feel like that was a huge one for me, kind of coming from this, you know, I was very young, and, you know, as when we're young and kind of, especially as a woman or as, you know, for someone like me, I was, you know, it was really about kind of like being attractive and not in a way that I'm beautiful, but attracting people, mm-hmm. you know, attracting mates and, becoming a mom just made everything feel so different. I mean, I remember holding this baby in my arms and really understanding what my body was really for, you know, whereas before I felt like it was this tool to kind of flirt and make love, or which it is, but it's also a tool, you know, it births babies and feeds them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that was just a really powerful shift. And I remember, you know, kind of really not caring about sex for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, after getting divorced and kind of easing back into dating, caring about it again, but just in a really different way. I protected myself so much more than before and just really honored myself more, way more.
Mm-hmm. So if you had to think of some bits of wisdom to share with some single moms out there, or just single parents in general, of how to approach parenting, approach loving themselves and their children, what would you share with them?
Well, I would share that it's really important to cultivate rest and space, and I think a lot of people forget that, even though it seems so simple and mundane, but to really create space so you can just chill out with your kiddos, and that can be a life changer, and that's really creates space for us to just really love each other and making that a priority, even if it costs money, even if it costs a babysitter or you know, a day off of work so you can just chill out at home. That just feels really important to me on this kind of activist level, because we all get so caught up in being busy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that would be, you know, my advice to any parent. And then for single parents, I think it's just so important to prioritize yourself, you know, and budget in childcare and create a community and be really honest with yourself and with your community. You know, if things aren't fine, don't pretend they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
If things are fine, then that's great. If you're really stoked to be single and a mom, that's awesome. You know, you don't have to be a certain way.
Right.
So honesty with ourselves and then really sharing that can just be so powerful.
Right. That transparency. I think that's really a good, you know, pearl of wisdom for anybody that's out there listening, because the more authentic you are with like what's really going on with you, the more people can really connect with you, because just presenting yourself as, you know, everything's good, everything's fine, like you said, like, it's good if it is, but if it's not, you can be, you, like, you could be suffering on your own for no particular reason, because more than likely, you know, everybody else is experiencing something else, on, you know, similar on a same level. So opening up that bridge of communication is really essential. And so one more question I wanted to ask was, what would be your insights to somebody that wanted to date a single mom, or somebody that wanted to, you know, get involved with somebody that had children?
That's such a good question, because I, for so long, was just always the one with the kid, and then now I'm dating another parent.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you really, if you're going to date somebody with kids, you just have to understand, you know, just really honoring their parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a partner, you really have to honor that, you know, because that's going to be one of the most vulnerable places,
mm-hmm.
probably the most vulnerable place for us parents. And, you know, for me, my motherhood for sure is. And so, you know, if you're going to date someone with kids, really tuning into that and then supporting it. And, you know, I've talked to other women who have dated dads, and how I remember one woman saying it was so interesting because she felt like she was second, which I hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that had never occurred to me. But I think that is partially true in a lot of ways. You know, not that we need to rank it, but to really help a parent hold that space as a parent, you know, and because it's hard and sometimes it sucks. And when you're dating someone and then your kid acts terribly in front of them, or the first time that happens, or, you know, it's so vulnerable. For me, that's a really vulnerable place, is sharing my inner parenting world with a lover.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if anyone is dating a parent, just to be so aware of that, how tender it is, and how all parents, we all really, really appreciate being supported in our parenting, however that comes. But feeling like somebody has our back, you know, because we're always like getting our kids back and backs and supporting our children.
Right.
So feeling supported is just priceless.
And what about interactions with the children themselves? I mean, I'm sure you've had different, you know, things that have worked when you're with Asher, and things that maybe would have been better if people didn't try to do those things.
Oh yeah, in dating, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've been lucky. I feel like I always brought, if anyone was going to interact with him, they were always pretty rad, you know? I think I would just say, again, honesty. Sometimes you have to tell people what you want. I, you know, really letting people know it's okay for you to, ooh, this is a good one. I think when people are dating, let's say someone's dating a single mom, and they don't want to, you know, quote, step on any toes. So if the child is rude or whatever, they'll go through the mother to communicate to the child instead of saying, hey, man, that wasn't cool.
Right.
So I really encourage direct communication
with
whoever, you know, assuming that this person has been mother or father approved.
Right.
But yeah, direct communication is essential, because we, like, I don't want to be a channel for this person to communicate with my child. I want them to connect, because that's how everybody will grow.
Right.
And remember each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dance of relationship, and how it just, you know, becomes more of like a line dance when there's children involved.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just so much joy and so much richness in terms of your experience. So I thank you so much for being willing to share.
Thanks, Tammy.
Yeah, your perspective.
It was really fun.
And we'll be able to be joined by your partner soon, and we'll kind of maybe hear a little bit more of what life is like with the blended family.
Yeah, we'll do chapter two.
Chapter two. So if you only heard a part of this interview with Miss Sadie Rose, you can tune into KZFR.org and go to the programs tab on Tuesdays, and you will find Love in the 21st Century. Click on that link, and then you will be able to check us out, listen to tonight's program, listen to other past programs, and hear what we have going on. We're going to have a song chosen by Miss Sadie Deluxe. taking us out, would you mind introing this song and why you chose it? This is Nothing Without Love.
Oh, yeah. I just love this song. It's kind of just has such a ballad quality to it, and just such a proclamation of love and how I'm nothing without love. And I feel like that's so true. You know, we're all just channeling love. That's how in our day to day, that's really what it's all about.
So if you're staying tuned for the next hour, this is going to be Ecotopia coming up next. Always a great show about environmental social justice issues. Stay tuned. It'll be a full and blessed hour.
Stuck in the center. Some would say that I'm all alone, but I am nothing without love. I am nothing without love. I'm but a ship stuck in the sand. Some would say that I'm all alone, but I-